the fact that the publisher didn't disclose his close ties to the Sulzberger family and the Goldman family have ties going back decades. That's not disclosed. He didn't recuse himself from the endorsement process. And you know, the fact that the Times editorial board ultimately in the statement that we were given said that, you know, the editorial board answers to the publisher.
We have to leave it there, Alex Semin. I want to thank you so much for being with us. We'll link to your coverage at American Prospect. Very happy birthday to Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 and 107.3 FM. This program has been brought to you today by the Tom Pastilio and Mickey Conlin team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, hosts of the Jazz Loft Summer Music Series in Stony Brook Village. The Tom Pastilio and Mickey Conlin team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate may be reached at tomandmickey.com. We thank them for their support of WUSB Stony Brook.
Where the time is just about 6 o'clock in the evening on a Tuesday night, and that means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. I could listen to that all night long, but we do have to get on with the show at some point, and it seems like as good a time as any. It's Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle, who will be saying his first words through a brand new microphone.
I will.
Oh, my God. You sound amazing.
Do I?
Yeah. Wow. Your voice just has more resonance to it.
I can add more, actually.
Well,
this isn't all the way.
Yeah, but you're leaving me behind now.
Well, you can always take some time to adjust things. Yeah, that's not helping. Please, no.
No? I don't know how to adjust it otherwise. Okay.
We have to both be able to speak to have a conversation.
At the same time, too.
Yeah, but okay. It sure is off the wall.
Speak over each other. That's how you really, you know, the microphone can work if you hear both voices.
Yeah, the dynamic nature of the conversation.
You should be able to separate our voices out if you have good stereo equipment.
No, not yet.
No, we will be stereo, though. I'm told that we are just advancing to the stage of actually
down.
Broadcasting in stereo.
Slow down.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Just, there's a little bit of maintenance going on, and, yeah, hopefully we can make some improvements.
Yeah, I put the car in front of the horse again. All right, well, here we are, another action-packed edition of Off the Wall. Did you vote? Today's election day in some places. Well, actually, you should.
Several.
You shouldn't vote because you're not a resident of that area, and neither am I. Congressional District 19, New York 19. If you're in that district, put us on pause or just run out of the house with, you know, a radio by your ear and run to the polling place and vote because I guess the polls close at 9 o'clock, it being New York. Congressional District 19 is Hudson Valley, that area.
Is that upstate?
No, it's downstate. What do you mean? That's only upstate. We're at the very bottom. Everything is upstate from here, except for New York City, and it's not New York City.
So who's running? What's the big race up there?
Catskills, that area.
Okay.
If you have mountains near you and you're in New York, there's a good chance. Okay, well, it's a special election. To fill an empty seat that was that used to be held by a Democrat, and Republicans want this seat. Republican Mark Molinaro, the Dutchess County Executive, is facing off against Democrat Pat Ryan, who is the Ulster County Executive. So it's a battle of the county executives. But here's the thing: Lee Zeldin is all twisted in a bunch over this because Governor Hochul kind of. told him about himself yesterday, apparently. I just saw this this quote that was being passed around, where basically she said that he's not a real New Yorker and he should take a bus to Florida. Now, I don't know if she really said that, but if she did, good for her. It's about time, you know, we say what's really on our minds here.
Dang.
Yeah, and he did not like that at all. He was tweeting all night saying, I'm going to get in my car. Yeah, you tell me to get on a bus, I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to drive upstate and when I get upstate, I'm going to help this Molinaro guy win the election because that's all it takes is for me to get in my car and dude, leave the Pinto at home. Seriously. First of all, I think she's wrong. I think you are a New Yorker. Because I don't think New York is perfect. And I think there are these really ugly and unhealthy types of, how do I say this, philosophies and viewpoints and actions that simply gather strength. That's what you are. You're part of that. You're part of the negativity of New York that has always existed, the racism, the sexism, the ignorance. I mean, there's just so many ways I could say it, but I'm trying to say it as respectfully as possible. People who spread hatred, people who spread ignorance, fear, nationalism, racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia. You've got it all, man. You're part of New York, unfortunately. But we aim to drive you out of power. And, you know, eventually we all know you're going to wind up in Florida because, hey, that's a magnet for you. Your boy Trump is down there. and they're reshaping the school curriculum so that you don't have to learn all the bad stuff that this country did, and slavery will be whitewashed, and anything even remotely treating gay people or trans people as human will be taken right out of the libraries and the schools. But, you know, you try that up here, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And hopefully good results tonight in CD19. We'll see. But regardless, this guy is running for governor against Hochul. He must know he's not going to win. What happens then? I think that's when he, maybe he won't get on a bus to Florida, but he'll get a U-Haul and just head on down there. What's left up here? You know, what can you possibly do? Except, you know, lead some rallies maybe and marches and, wave some flags around. Not much. So yeah, good for Kathy Hochul for saying something direct and, pointed. And yeah, she's going to get all kinds of crap for it, obviously, but that's part of the game. So yeah. Not a true New Yorker. You're a New Yorker, but not a true New Yorker, Lee Zeldin. And your time is almost up. As far as, not that anybody will know that you were serving as a U.S. representative, because the whole time you've been doing other things. You know, you've been campaigning for Trump, or you've been running for governor, or you've just been going around spreading your ignorance everywhere. You haven't held a town hall in God knows how long. It's been many, many years. So, you know, it's going to be refreshing. Even, you know, God forbid a Republican wins in November. But no matter who, it's going to be, maybe it won't be a refreshing change. Because I saw some of the candidates that are running. There's also a primary for who's going to be the Republican that takes on Bridget Fleming, I believe, is the Democrat who's running for his seat, and it was redistricted a little bit. I think Democrats have an advantage. Fingers crossed, we'll see. But the Republicans, there's I think three of them. They're turning on each other. They're accusing each other of not being Trump enough. I'm not kidding. I saw a commercial the other day where somebody was saying that, I think it was Bond, a woman named Bond who's running, I might have the name wrong, she didn't stand by Trump enough, and that she's liberal. And, of course, you know, if you listen to her, she's gonna be extolling the virtues of Trump and you know, saying that everybody who isn't Republican is a communist. But it's just kind of fun to watch them tear each other apart, as I'm sure it's fun for Republicans to watch Democrats tear each other apart, which is why, you know, it's a stupid political strategy, because at some point somebody is going to have the nomination and you're going to have to support them if you want your party to win. But, yeah, in this particular case, got the popcorn ready to go and see how that plays out. But, yeah, election today, If you're a Republican and you can pick between one of those three, boy, good luck with that. But mostly the CD19 upstate, Catskills, Hudson Valley. Important congressional seat is up for grabs. And thing is, this is August. You know, it's August the 23rd. Not many people go out and vote on August 23rd. So if you're one of those people and you go out and you vote, it's like you're voting for 10 people. So think about that. You know, it's the closest you'll get to election fraud, probably. But, you know, you'll be speaking for a whole lot of people because most people won't bother. And that, unfortunately, is where Republicans have an advantage because, you know, not to be nasty, but so many of them don't have a life. And they, you know, just going out to the polling place, no matter what day or time it is, they'll do it because it's something to do. Whereas Democrats, they're out partying, going to the disco, all that kind of thing. They're hungover, and they forget. You know, they forget. Or they think they can do it later. They go to the wrong place. So, guys, get your act together, all right? Election day.
Hey, I definitely know the kind of things you're talking about as far as that observation with a lot of questioning of the loyalty to Trump, and that's and or whatever the GOP has become. And it's this very telling thing because before it was a lot more of questioning people's loyalty or patriotism at all. They don't have a lot of things to defend the kind of behavior that they've been exhibiting as far as how they take our process seriously or not, and the respect for government, and it's all either being on board with stuff that really is about patent lies and fealty, and now it's questioning loyalty to that so they can get numbers up in their people. But I think that's a bad strategy because it's like sort of strong arming. It's like by force trying to get allegiance from then your own people. And this is with sort of shaming and negative consequences. It's not like a inspiring and something that people are motivated by as much. I think it's this thing of fear because it's about a person and not mm-hmm. the people.
Yeah, and you can be purged very easily. I mean, look at what's happened with those Republicans who have dared to stand up to Trump, you know, in the most basic of ways. You know, the guy does something so terrible, and you call him on it, and then you find yourself purged. It's just like the old Soviet state where, you know, you stood up against some dictator or just didn't do exactly what they wanted at a particular time, and you found yourself, well, over there. It wound up a lot worse for many people, but at the very least, you found yourself out of power, you know, and that is something that we are seeing here. It's scary because it's being done by the people. People all around us are the ones deciding, yeah, you dared to stand up to Trump, so you have to go.
But under false pretense.
Yeah, but, you know, at some point, you got to take responsibility. At some point, you know, the evidence is out there. Maybe you don't believe MSNBC, you know, but you can believe some other news source besides the one that's always on in your house. You know, look elsewhere. Look at international reporting. Look at people who don't have a dog in the race. And just look at the actual evidence that is coming out. Listen to C-SPAN and see what is actually happening. Reach your own decision. Don't reach a decision based on what the people around you are telling you to do. And this goes for all sides, obviously. It's just in this particular case to see, I mean, when I say this particular case, there are so many cases, I don't even know which one to focus on. Let's say, you know, the most recent one, the one going on right now with all the top secret documents. I'm seeing Republican senators and congressmen trying to justify every conceivable possible way this lands. You know, why do they have top secret documents? Well, to keep them safe at Mar-a-Lago. Yeah, nobody asked for them back. He didn't put them there. The FBI planted them, etc. Just every single possible scenario is covered one way or another. It's typical conspiracy theory or just what somebody who is guilty says. Did I say that? I meant to say this. Or, no, I was lying when I said that because I was forced to lie. At some point, it becomes silly. It becomes silly. And we all have the ability to stand up and say, enough already. This is ridiculous. Let's get on with our lives and just not have this this my side is the only side there is, and everything else has to be destroyed. I don't know how we got into this. I don't know how it got so crazy, but it is crazy, and the only way out of it is for both sides to start talking again and working together. And obviously, I feel that one side is much, much more guilty of just losing touch with what's right. With how to communicate, with how to govern. And I feel the evidence is just all around us in so many ways. We have to take it seriously.
it's in this sort of simple question I've been thinking about that I'm hearing a lot of parallels. And the question is, like, if you do not vote with your party, or you're in one or the other of, as we're talking about, like a polar system, or, you know, very, very few party options, or just the way the parties are, how we speak about our society, even though we know there are as many points of view in this country as there are people, when you really get down to issue by issue, and then whatever that amounts to in entirety for every single individual voter. But the question, I just find this is a simple thing. Like, if you can't get around, the idea that, constantly voting, even if you know something is wrong, there's all sorts of evidence, but you're being convinced of one thing, simply that if you do not go the way of what you're being told by an affiliation you have, and not by what you've actually enlightened yourself with, and is that make you less of a member of your party? I don't think it does. I think, you know, voting.
What's the party? You know, the party has changed. You know, if you stand up, if you do what Liz Cheney did. And, you know, she is still a staunch conservative. I don't think I agree with her on anything. You know, her views on abortion, her views on defense, her views on social programs, you name it. I firmly disagree with her on all of these things. But, and I never would have thought this was possible years ago, I do have respect for somebody who believes something and argues about it. And it doesn't have to be my position. You know, back in the Reagan days and the Bush era, I thought that was as bad as it could get. But no, this is far, far worse, because right or wrong, you must follow, you must obey. We've never been that. We've never been that in this country. And here we are right now. So you have somebody as staunchly Republican and conservative as Liz Cheney being purged because she dared to stand up to him. You know, and while I disagree with her on so much, I strongly support her right to do that, anyone's right to do that. And it's just so, so disappointing and sobering to see how few people have that basic degree of courage. You know, they're so afraid. And why are they so afraid exactly? You know, what's so bad about not winning an election? You know, it's not like you're sent off to Siberia or something afterwards. You know, what is it about Trump that makes people not want to stand up to him? What can he do to you? You know, seems to me that America is proving itself to be much stronger than Trump. And, you know, we're seeing that with all the legal action, with all the stress that he's being put under for the things that he has done, being forced to answer for those things. So, yeah, I think this is an important test of our system. And, you know, seeing Republicans saying things like defund the FBI, look, I'm no fan of the FBI. You know, they've hurt many of my friends. But they are a part of this nation. They are a part of law enforcement. And if you're going to purport to say that you support law enforcement, the second they go after somebody that is part of your camp, you're going to say defund them? You forever lose the right to criticize Black Lives Matter or anybody who even suggest that cops lose their funding for the things that they have done. And those are for very specific things. You know, nothing like what the FBI is being accused of doing here. You know, we're talking about murder. We're talking about abuse. We're talking about racist policies. And you can find all sorts of things in the FBI, but what we're talking about right now here is raiding a home and taking confidential, top-secret documents out of it.
It's not a home.
That's the crime. Well,
it's a club.
Doesn't he live there?
No, but he fought with Palm Beach to make it not a home.
Where does he live? You know, I don't.
He can't live there for more than 3 weeks at a time.
Well, where does he live then? Does he sleep in his car?
I think he is unhoused. Yeah.
You know, I don't care. Could not care less. Really, I don't care where Trump sleeps.
Probably a golf cart.
As long as it's nowhere around here. Anyway, point is the hypocrisy. It's just oozing out of the seams. You know. you get condemned for criticizing a particular entity, and then when the shoe is on the other foot, they do it even worse. And of course, that's okay. So, yeah, when you see things like that going on with the people around you, question it. Question them. Question yourself. Question your beliefs. We do it all the time. And it's important to always be an individual, I say.
And turnabout is fair. Mm-hmm. You can change your mind.
Not after you vote, you can't. So
no, change it before
today,
you vote.
Yeah.
Definitely
mean,
before.
Think this through. Don't just follow with everybody else. Okay, speaking of voting or elections or opinions or things like that, most U.S. adults think gun violence is increasing nationwide and want to see gun laws made stricter. That's according to a new poll that finds broad public support for a variety of gun restrictions, including many that are supported by majorities of Republicans and gun owners. What do you think about that? It was conducted between July 28th and August 1st. And, it basically says overall 8 in 10 Americans perceive that gun violence is increasing around the country. About two-thirds say it's increasing in their state. Less than half, though, say it's increasing in their community. So, it's a boundary there, I suppose. But 71% of Americans, 71% of Americans... I'm going to say it three times. 71% of Americans, almost three-quarters, say gun laws should be stricter. And that includes about half of Republicans, and the vast majority of Democrats, and a majority of those in gun-owning households. And, it's entirely possible that gun-owning households are more responsible than people who don't even own guns and are making policy. Think about that. So, there's always hope. There's always a possibility for something to change. And the thing to really focus on sometimes is how news is delivered to you. For instance, if you watch Fox News or you follow them on Twitter, you will guarantee at least once a day, if not more, see how bad things are in Chicago, how people are always getting shot in Chicago. And the reason they do this is because Chicago has anti-gun laws. So in their eyes, this proves that anti-gun laws don't work. Never mind that they're right next to Indiana, where there's basically no gun laws and people can simply walk across the border without any problem whatsoever. It's easy to get guns into a place where guns aren't legal. So, it's basically saying, we have a problem with people not following the law. That doesn't mean you get rid of the law. But also, Chicago is run by a Democrat. So that proves that Democrats are the ones causing all the problems. Now, there's a couple of things here. Cities have more people in them. we're getting very basic here. But, cities have more people in them than, the country. Okay, you with me so far? All right, so when you have more people gathered together in a relatively smaller area than the vast mountains and prairies, they tend to vote Democrat. That's just a fact. They tend to. Massive amounts of people tend to vote Democrat. It's a more popular party. Not afraid to say that. It's true. You only have Republicans controlling things when you do things like give states with very few people the same amount of power as states with a huge amount of people, i.e. the Senate. Two senators in North Dakota, two senators in California, and two senators in South Dakota, too. So now they're ahead. things like that. So, okay, how about we look at those statistics as far as gun shootings, in a different way. Let's look at the states. Let's look at what states had the most gun deaths in recent years. A very cursory look, and anybody can do this, will show you that of the top 25, and this is per 100,000, because obviously some states have more people than other states, so per 100,000, the highest death toll from guns, I believe it was 23 out of 25, might have been 22 out of 25, were Republican-dominated states. And by that I mean they controlled the legislature, they controlled the state senate, they had a governor, or they had enough of that so that Democratic policies could not possibly pass. So it's, you know, if you look at it in that particular way, oh my God, it's the Republican areas where this is out of control. Or you could simply pick a city where crime is always a problem when you have a lot of people together and say, wow, it's run by Democrats, therefore they're the problem. So you have to be critical on everything you're told, all the numbers that you see, because it's done for a reason.
Yeah, it's a statistical pitfall when you're just taking it in. Yeah, it sounds, I guess, like, you know, people can seem authoritative when they lay something down. But, yeah, that's a great way to kind of change the way you would look at what might be presented. When you're just talking about hyperbole, it's easy, as you say, to make a big metropolis, a big scary place with all sorts of unknowns. You know, you can make it into this big, big scary thing.
People of different colors and backgrounds.
Oh, and you know, you tell that to people from you know elsewhere, all kinds of horror stories, and you know, some of them, absolutely everyday life in those places, because there's just a lot of concentrations and less room to move around. And then, of course, those states around large cities, like you're saying, that have very, very free purchase and transfer laws with weaponry.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the kind of thing that we urge people to always try and think about when they're confronted with these particular stories and statistics and things like that. Hey, Ted Cruz tweeted this week to abolish the IRS. What do you think about that? I don't know if he realizes that he gets paid through taxpayer money, so that kind of comes through the IRS. That's how you get the taxes in the first place. But, yeah, apparently because the IRS now is being tasked with collecting more tax money from the biggest corporations that haven't been paying anything. And this is going to help the economy.
Well, look,
why would somebody be against that? Well, of course, people like Ted Cruz would be.
Look no further than the companies that are in his district or in his state, right? I mean, what might he be interested in keeping protected under the status quo without that kind of oversight or redoubled enforcement effort?
Texas? Yeah, they have
all kinds of stuff. We don't have to get into it. It's just, it's so plain to see.
The barbecue lobby, the chili lobby.
Yeah.
Or do you mean the oil lobby? Is that what you mean? Yeah, that makes more sense.
All kinds of hot sauce, yeah.
Anyway, the Internal Revenue Service, in a somewhat related story, will launch a full security review of its facilities nationwide. As congressional Republicans and far-right extremists are lashing out at the agency and the new funding it is slated to receive in the massive spending law, which managed to get passed. And, you know, that's something, too, that I've been thinking a lot about, because you have people like Joe Manchin, right, who have been nothing but trouble for so long to the Democrats. And I was, you know, really tempted to suggest that he be punished one way or another. Not purged, but certainly, you know, lose some important things that matter to him from the Democrats. Because, you know, while you're a member of the Democratic Party, if you're not going to vote with Democrats, you're going to keep helping the Republicans out. And that kind of an approach would have felt good, but it would have alienated him. And I don't think he ever would have gotten to where he finally got to. And since people were patient, yeah, we didn't get everything we wanted, but we got something. It made the Republicans really mad. And I think that's the way, moving forward, we have to deal with those we disagree with who are still on our side. Patience, you know, and realization that you won't get everything you want, but at least you're better off with them than without them.
And if you're right about the kinds of side effects and impacts that not doing anything, that inaction will have, people may be motivated by what occurs because they refuse to get on board initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
They're going to need flood money in Texas. I hear they had terrible rainstorms down there.
Senator Rick Scott of Florida, remember him, chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, wrote an open letter last week to job seekers discouraging them from applying to work at the IRS. Yeah. Basically, they're going after all these institutions and labeling them as the enemy because they're not doing exactly what they want right now. Same thing that they're doing to their own fellow Republicans who don't do exactly what they say.
Well, competent people are being circulating a lot more because it's not their administration appointing, making some of those appointments. And when things do involve oversight and stuff that doesn't benefit these kinds of institutions they have zero respect for and have gutted and like just completely removed as much resource as they possibly could when they were in power. I mean, you get this resentment for the fact that they couldn't completely destroy it, that something they thought they had control of and could weaken so much might come back, scares them, and it's just like this visceral reaction and big words.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, let's change it up a little bit. The Little League World Series is going on. You know, we didn't even know about this a week ago, but a place we walked into had it on the TV, and we noticed that there was a team from Long Island that actually qualified. I was really confused by how the whole system works. But
wait, that was Little League?
Yeah, those kids are 12.
Okay, wow, that actually makes some sense.
Makes more sense.
Yeah.
Huh? It turns out they have basically a winner, I think, from every region or maybe every state, not exactly sure. But you know, what happens is the team, in this particular case, Massapequa Coast on Long Island, they won the New York championship. So I guess they get to be called New York. And then they
Metro.
They beat another team, and then they got to go to the World Series as a result of that. And it was pretty inspiring just to see that and to realize that, hey, there's some local representation here. They didn't do so well when they got there, but you know what? I got to say this. That team from Hawaii, I think that team could beat the Mets. And the Mets are in first place, too, by the way. They are so good. And you know, when you're 12, there's all kinds of differences. Like, you see kids on there that weigh 77 pounds because they give all the statistics for them. Then they're pitching to a kid who weighs 160 pounds, you know, double, and they're playing on the same field in the same game. Now, does that seem fair? Maybe we need to know, are these kids really 12? Or, you know, maybe there's some kind of a test that we could run to make sure that, you know, everyone has the same amount of BMI, is that the term, you know, the body mass index or whatever, and really, you know, put these kids through the strainer as far as making sure everybody's on an even keel. Or maybe we just accept the fact that everybody's different and some people train in a different way. Some people are more athletic. Some people are bigger. And that's just the luck of the draw. And maybe we can apply that to other athletic events, too, that people, especially on the right wing, seem to be all bent out of shape about, saying, oh, my God, this person once was a different gender, and now they have a tremendous advantage. You know, if somebody literally is going through all of that, and you think they're just doing it to win a basketball game, you clearly don't understand the path that they have been on their entire lives. And it's just so upsetting to see people being targeted and victimized in this way. And then seeing something like this, it was the most inspiring thing, seeing all these kids together, all different shapes and sizes, accepting each other. And it's okay. You know, it's okay that Hawaii is so much more... I don't want to say better because I really think the Massapequa team was really, really good. But, they haven't – I don't think anyone scored a run against them the whole tournament. You know, they certainly have a different way of training and a different physical prowess, I guess, is the best way to say it. this is what happens. This is how sports works. And if these kids can accept that, I think the rest of us can accept it as well.
Yeah, that team itself, I mean, many of them had players that watching, you know, at first glance, you'd think were carrying the team a lot more than if you actually get into it and see just how much everybody puts their heart into it and has a place on it. And I don't know, I played a lot of baseball when I was that age, and it brings back a lot of memories, and I think it's kind of cool to see how it's changed and how they approach it at that level of play, and just the intensity of, like, taking it seriously, watching what the pros are doing, and, like, just loving the game, getting and trying as hard as you can, even if, yeah, you're matched up oddly as far as against the pitcher or there's somebody hitting that has just been unstoppable the whole time, you know, everybody still has a chance.
Yeah, I think it goes the opposite way, though. I think the pros should be watching the kids because they can learn so much from their spirit. And just seeing some of the things that happened. I mean, I think maybe a lot of us have seen the image of the kid who got hit by a ball. And this was actually before the World Series. I think this was a qualifying game. But the pitcher was so upset he couldn't go on. You know, he was you know, in tears, knowing that he beamed this guy. And he was, you know, the guy taking the base was on first base. And that kid came over and gave him a big hug, saying, "I'm okay. It's a game. Let's you know, work together." Do you think you'd ever see that in the major leagues? I mean, maybe you would, but it would be overshadowed by all the times somebody comes charging at the pitcher after getting hit. And, you know, it's all about ego and salary and things like that, not love of the game, not spirit, not compassion for your fellow players on either team. And it just seemed to be genuine. It really seemed to be a genuine feeling. And you watch what they're doing there. They're actually having fun. And they're making the game better as a result. That's what we learn from.
And the divisions bringing in the international teams, that expansion, just to see how big baseball is all over the world, and that they're putting it into this big competition, it just gives so much visibility to places that you would not have imagined were so into the sport itself. So it's just a great diversion.
Absolutely. Speaking of diversions, we have a diversion here. I'm still going through, well, I'm going to be doing this for a long time, going through a music from the top 100 of every single year. And we've gotten a good amount of feedback for this as well. Some people wrote in, actually, to otw@2600.com when I was talking about the song from How the Grinch Stole Christmas. A number of people believe that the artist I credited the song with, Thurl Ravenscroft, was not the actual singer. That was Boris Karloff. It's not. A lot of people think that. In fact, there's a whole Wikipedia page just about this. "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch" is a Christmas song that was originally written and composed for the 1966 cartoon special, Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. The lyrics were written by Theodore Dr. Seuss Geisel. The music was composed by Albert Haig, and the song was performed by Thurl Ravenscroft. Now, because Ravenscroft was not credited in the closing credits of the special, it is often mistakenly attributed to Boris Karloff, who served as narrator and the voice of the Grinch in the special, but who himself was not a trained singer. I don't know why they didn't give him credit, but they should have. Thurl Ravenscroft did a couple of songs that made it to the top 100 of those 1940 songs that we were playing, and that's how I learned about this. It really was pretty incredible. Other people wrote in concerning one of the songs that I played, particularly the one about the Monotones, the one by the Monotones, the song Book of Love, where I played what I believe to be the fake version. And I happen to mention that it came from an album called American Graffiti. Apparently that was music from the film American Graffiti. I didn't know this. This is just something I saw online. I thought it was just basically the name of a compilation CD. And apparently the DJ Wolfman Jack was in that film. And what we were hearing with the voice that just somehow didn't seem to belong in the opening was Wolfman Jack for some reason being a part of the song. Was not mentioned, was not indicated in the music itself. I had no knowledge of either the film or this compilation. But this is an example of what can happen if you're not careful with what music you download. You might get something where somebody is doing a really bad job singing over something, or you might get a completely fake version. And by that I mean... Okay, I think I gave the example of Dolby Gray's Drift Away. And for those who aren't familiar with the song, I'm going to play the opening of it here. This is what we all should be familiar with.
Day after day I'm more confused. Yet I look for the light through the pouring rain. Know that's a game that I hate to lose, and I'm feeling the strain. Ain't it a shame? Oh, give it to me, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
Okay, we're all familiar with that song. We've heard that song a million times. Now, this is the version that I got by accident once by simply going online, going to Amazon and saying, hey, I want that song, and I got this. Similar, but not the same.
Day after day, I'm more confused.
And that is Dolby Gray.
But I look for the light through the pouring rain.
But not in his prime.
You know that's a game that I hate to lose.
Sad, really.
I'm feeling the strain. Ain't it a shame?
Pay attention to the second.
Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
Okay, right here, listen to this.
Give me the beat, boys, and free my soul.
Where he says, give me the beat, it's not raised intonation like it is in the original, you know, where he's raising his voice. Here it's kind of flat. It just doesn't have the passion. It is Dolby Gray. And the reason they do this is because they get screwed in the initial record contract that they sign before they even know they have a hit. And they say, wow, if only I knew I had a hit, let me record that again, and this time I'll get a better deal. Except while they may get a better deal, they don't have a better song. And many times we are none the wiser for it because it's marketed as original artist. And it is the original artist, but it's not the original recording. So you got to be really careful about that. Now, that song was from the 70s, so it's kind of out of step of where I am right now. I'm listening to the 50s and starting to venture into the 60s, and I've been through the 40s or part of the 40s. So it gets harder, though. It gets harder as you come across more of these re-recordings.
It just puts you in a weird position as a consumer because, on the one hand, the artist currently or most recently was trying to recoup some of what was lost by getting whatever package, promotion, tours, and distribution or whatever was included initially, as you said, before there was any kind of airplay and recognition of the track. And then coming away from that, they try to re-record this. So if you get the one that's re-recorded, even though it isn't as good, authentic, or original, by paying for that one, you're not actually supporting the artist. And this just is, it just seems like the returns, you know, the consequences being delayed. And then it just comes back to, copyright and publishing deals from major labels back in the day just being really predatory.
Yeah, it's a sad thing. And there are so many things you do learn going through songs like this. You learn how much material was never credited to the original artists. You know, particularly African Americans really got the shaft. Elvis got so many hits on the backs of others who never got the credit they deserved. And you just see that repeated over and over and over again. But you do see a change as well. You see more representation as the years move forward. Whether it's sufficient, whether it's enough, that's certainly open to conjecture.
People just learned the patterns, and the temptations that create the patterns are still there. And after a certain amount of time, people just get more intelligence about what the market is. They network and support each other, because artists truly, they understand what it takes to get that stuff out and the work involved, and they're going to let other people know before they go down that path. So I hope it changes.
Me too. Now, when I'm listening to these songs, I never know what I'm going to hear next. You know, I just scroll down and find the song and download it from whatever site happens to have a good source. And sometimes you hear something that just kind of... you don't know what it is. This was an example. Okay. This is a 14-year-old kid out of England, and I just got so distracted by the way he pronounces hand. I know, you know, I shouldn't fixate on that, but it just is. It's compelling. It just makes it really memorable. And I don't know what motivated this kid to come out and record this song, but it works. It really does. It's kind of cool, kind of passionate. And I'd never heard of it before on any of the 50s radio stations or channels. Let's listen.
In his hands he's got you and me, brother. In his hands he's got the whole world in his hands.
Thing is, you know, every other word he says, I don't get an accent, just the word hands. So it's so distracting, but it really is amazing. His name was Laurie London. His name still is Laurie London, by the way. And that was his only song. He just came out, sung this this gospel motivational type song, and that was it. Very mysterious.
Yeah, there's like, I guess that's vibrato, and very like a band leader or something, you know.
Uh huh.
Very like on step, you know, on beat.
Yeah. I don't believe this, but on YouTube right now, I just actually found another song by Laurie London. So let me see. Okay, that's not him. Okay, he's got a chorus. Let's listen.
Hand it down. Hand it down.
Okay, wait, is he messing with us? He has to use the word hand in every song that he records?
He is saying it a little differently.
Yeah, but it's still the accent on the word hand and nothing else. Okay, well, that's one story that you get from listening to old music. Here's something else that I thought was really surprising. I'm just going to play this without comment. From 1946, I believe, or 47, a 78. Thank you.
Hello, cutie. What's your name?
Fresh. I don't talk to strangers.
Oh, I'm no stranger. Been waiting every evening for you to walk by.
Keep waiting. I'm still walking.
Oh, what's your name?
None of your business.
Pretty name. I'll just call you Linda.
Well, how did you guess?
When I go to sleep, I never count sheep. I count all the charms about Linda.
Okay. Kind of creepy song. It's called Linda. There were actually two versions of it that were out at the same time. This one was basically written and dedicated. It was written back in 1942, actually, and dedicated to a one-year-old child named Linda, and her last name was Eastman, as in Eastman Kodak, as in Linda Eastman, future wife of Paul McCartney, future Linda McCartney. How weird is that? One-year-old Linda McCartney, or Linda Eastman, is already famous. Goes to show. That's how it works. That's how the industry works.
And is connected in these strange celestial ways. There's this anticipated young person came up to still be involved and have a love for music, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And we are going to go out with actually a group that I want to learn more about. This is also from 1947, the Mills Brothers. Oh boy, these guys are amazing. The first African-American host of a radio show on CBS. They began singing in the choir of their Methodist Episcopal Church and basically rose to stardom and have an incredible amount of hits and just really, really good music. And there's just something about their style, their voices, that you feel you're listening to history. You really feel like you're listening to something that is truly amazing, developed right in front of your ears. If you have any comments on any of this, OTW at 2600.com. Let us go out with a scratchy 78. Stay tuned for Finn. These are the Mills Brothers. Good night.
Across the alley from the Alamo lived a pinto pony and a Navajo, who sang a sort of Indian hi-de-ho to the people passing by. The pinto spent his time as wishing flies, and the Navajo watched the lazy skies, and very rarely did they ever rest their eyes on the people passing by. One day they went a-walking along the railroad track. They was wishing, not a-looking. They never came back. Oh, across the alley from the Alamo, when the summer sun decides to settle low, a fly sings an Indian hearty-ho to the people passing by. Across the alley from the Alamo lived a pinto, a pony, and a Navajo, who used to bake frijoles and cornmeal dough for the people passing by. They thought that they would make some easy bucks by washing their frijoles in doves and lux, a pair of very conscientious clucks to the people passing by. Then they took this cheap vacation. The shoes were polished bright, though they never heard the whistle. Doot, doot. They're clear out of sight. Oh, across the alley from the Alamo, when the starlight beams its tender glow, the beans go to sleep and then there ain't no dough for the people passing by. One day they went a-walking along the railroad track. They was wishing, a-looking, doot, doot. They never came back. Oh, across the alley from the Alamo, when the summer sun decides to settle low, a fly sings an Indian hidey-ho to the people passing by. Across the alley from the Alamo.